Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999.
Hello and thanks for joining us for another episode of Friends with Money, Money Magazine's podcast to help you earn, save and achieve your financial goals. My name is Tom Watson, a senior journalist here at Money Magazine, and as always, it is great to be with you. Today, we are back on the investing train, and we're going to be focusing in on the topic of local versus international markets, a topic that I'm sure a lot of people have given thought to when building their portfolios over the years and the asset allocations within them. So we will be talking about investor sentiment around different markets, the issue of home bias, markets beyond Australia and the US, and a lot more. And to do that, I am very pleased to say that we are joined today by market analyst at IG Australia, Tony Sycamore. Tony, welcome to Friends with Money.
Thank you, Tom. Good to be on the show.
Great to have you on the show, Tony. To start us off, I know IG recently conducted some research which gauged investor sentiment towards different markets. So what were some of the takeaways of that?
Yes, that's right. We had a survey which was across five of our main markets, Australia, UK, Singapore, Germany, and Japan, and it was across about 3,000 respondents. And it was taken at the end of last year, which, if you recall, we were still coming through a very uncertain period there. The Fed had just started its dovish pivot when it was moving away from forecasting or predicting more interest rate hikes, but inflation and interest rate hikes were still very much well front and center in our clients' mind. And as a result of that, they were more inclined to hold cash levels. Their cash levels were a lot higher than you would usually expect, which makes sense. They were putting money aside to pay for some of these cost of living pressures, which we have seen over the past 2 to 3 years as a result of inflation. So one of the key takeaways from there, which we speak about this being a biannual consumer sentiment survey, if you like. So things have changed quite dramatically since that survey went into the field. Now, currently, our next survey is being undertaken, but the world's changed quite significantly. Interest rates have certainly peaked and potentially are going to be lowered in the next 6 months into year end in many of the major developed economies, if they haven't already started. And the other point of that is that our clients back in December predicted correctly that they were looking for the NASDAQ, the technology-laden NASDAQ, to outperform the ASX 200 over the next six-month period. And here we are now halfway through the fifth month of the year. What we can see is the ASX 200, it's up about 3.3% for the year. It's been quite volatile, as we know. But that high-flying NASDAQ, up close to 10% for the year. And that really does give you a bit of a forward-looking insight into what these consumer sentiment surveys can actually give to, or bring to the table, if you like, because it's all very well and good saying, look, this is what our clients thought back in December, but what are they thinking in the next 6 months? So we'll be holding our breath and just seeing what is the overall view of our clients as we start the second half of this year.
It's really interesting to hear about, Tony. And sticking on your clients still, are you seeing any trends at the moment in terms of what they're buying, both in terms of Australian and international equities?
Yes, look, the big names that you would expect from the Magnificent Seven are very popular. Stocks like Tesla, Nvidia are always up there as probably two of the most traded stocks by our clients. And then locally, Zip's come to the forefront since its earnings report. We've seen a lot of interest in Zip. And I guess when we're looking at other local stocks which round out or get a good deal of client interest is the banks. The banks are very popular, as well as those big mining stocks. So we do have bits where there's probably the thematic can drive interest. So for example, lithium has been a hot sector off and on over the past 12 months. Uranium names at the moment seem to be very, very much well in the focus there, as the price of uranium has continued to rally. But these ebb and flow. But when we're talking about those ones which consistently are the most popular, it is those names in the Magnificent Seven, and of course the big banks and the mining stocks here in Australia.
Tony, one of the elements that I've seen come up plenty of times before on this topic is the issue of home bias. So do you think it's typical for Australian investors to have a home bias towards some of the companies that you were just talking about? And I guess, is there any danger to that?
There is. There's pros and cons of everything in the investment world, Tom. And one of the big things we do see is this home bias, which means that investors and traders are more comfortable investing in Australian companies. It's not just an Australian phenomenon. It is a worldwide phenomenon. And the reason because of that is you seem to have that familiarity, that relationship with a lot of these companies, which are trusted. You know what's happening. You see the information and the news coming through on a day-to-day basis. And there's also, I think, a bit of a parochial nature in terms of people want to get out there and support the local economy. And by preferring those stocks, what they're doing is they're missing out on the fact that, hey, look, the ASX 200 is a very solid index, but it only represents 2% of the global equity market by cap. And what that means is that they're missing out on that 98%, which is all those global stock markets outside of Australia. And when we think about the ASX 200, it is made up by two sectors are very heavily weighted in there. The big mining sectors, the big miners are huge. And of course, the financials are about 25% of the ASX 200. And we don't have a lot of technology stocks. We don't have a lot of growth stocks. And again, by focusing on this home bias or by having this home bias, it means that traditionally, investors just aren't getting out and getting that exposure to those offshore stocks, which do have that IT element, that AI element, the semiconductor aspect of it. And that really is a big miss.
When you kind of bring up the 2% and then narrowing it down in terms of the kind of two big sectors that dominate Australia, it definitely really hits home there, Tony. So broadly speaking, what are some of the pros and cons of having both a local and an international allocation of equities in a portfolio? And I guess related to that, Tony, what should investors be thinking about here?
Well, I think it comes back to portfolio management 101. By getting exposure to other markets, you're not putting all your eggs in one basket, which is, as we said, it's a fundamental principle of investing. So you're diversifying your portfolio, you can smooth your returns. And it's not just all in equities, it could be in bonds, it could be in commodities that you're looking to gain exposures. But what it does is it does give you a little bit more certainty in terms of what your returns can potentially look like. You're not just, as I said, putting all your eggs in, right, I'm going to buy Tesla, I'm going to buy Nvidia. And, you know, those stocks have done fantastically well over the past 18 months. But if you recall back in 2022, those names had a terrible period due to the rising interest rates and inflation. So there is ebbs and cycles in markets, and we need to be aware of that. While we might see, for example, the Nikkei is absolutely flying high at the moment. It's up around 16% year to date. As we mentioned, the ASX 200 is sitting up just a fraction over 3.3%. So where you can actually get those better returns is by putting allocations into other markets. And generally, I think it's a really good thing to do. And I will say that more and more we are seeing IG's clients look to gain exposure to diversify out of just this Australian equity market into a broader investing theme, if you like, across their platforms.
Makes a lot of sense. I definitely know my mates, and this is very anecdotal, but they've definitely kind of spread their wings and started to expand a little bit more outside of Australia as well, as they've kind of gained a little bit more confidence and knowledge. Tony, as I said before, I think it's pretty natural for Australians to obviously invest in the Australian market, but also in the US market as well, and US companies like the ones that you've mentioned. But can it be worth investors looking at other markets beyond the US as well? As you mentioned, the Nikkei there, is it worth getting that kind of exposure outside of the big kind of familiar markets that people know about?
Yeah, it is. And again, it comes back to we have these cycles, and we know that when China stimulus and when the Chinese economy is growing very, very well, the Australian economy and the Australian stock market generally has a good exposure to that. But we've seen the Chinese economy, I guess, move into a period where the growth hasn't been as great, and the ASX 200, not purely because of that, but it has certainly played a part in the ASX 200 underperforming from a relative basis. But we look at the Nikkei, the Japanese stock market. We look at the German stock market, the UK stock market. The FTSE has broken higher recently, which has been, you know, it's The UK stock market, I think, is probably frustrated a lot of people, traded sideways for basically 14 months, and then it's just exploded higher. And it holds similar stocks that we have here in the ASX 200, a lot of energy stocks, a lot of big miners, and of course, a lot of financial stocks. Aside from that, we can also see interesting change in sentiment towards Chinese stocks over the past, I guess, 2 months has been quite dramatic as well. Some of those stock markets with Chinese exposure have rallied about 30%. Now, I was at a client dinner last night chatting to clients about what happens next for the Chinese stock market. And I think there's a broad consensus there that the Chinese stock market's quite undervalued, and probably where you have been seeing people invest in China, it's probably due to the fact some of them have had a very good run in the Japanese stock market, and they're now looking for better value in other markets. And it makes sense if you've got an allocation into Asia where you've done very well from your Japanese investments, maybe now the time is to switch into those Chinese markets. And that's exactly what I think we're seeing at this point of time. How much further does that go? Well, I think it can probably go for another 3 to 4 months. But the question probably comes back to is, we do know there is some geopolitical risks out there at this point of time. The Chinese stock market has been hinted, I guess, by regulatory issues coming from the Chinese government. And I think that needs to be kept in investors' mind as well, that it has had a tendency to be impacted probably a little bit more dramatically than other markets by the government playing a fairly active role in where some of these markets go, particularly if they start to get a little bit speculative in terms of their valuations.
Tony, you've teed me up perfectly to broaden the conversation a little bit about geopolitical events then. How big an impact can they potentially have on markets, both, I guess, Australia and abroad?
Geopolitical risks are a big part of our world currently. We have a war in Europe, which is now going on 2 years, and certainly tensions in the Middle East have been elevated since the October 7 attack there in Israel. And it has created volatility, but what we generally see is the volatility created by geopolitical events isn't quite as long-lasting as it is from economic or macro events. You'll see the price of oil has surged a number of times, initially in response to the Russian invasion of Ukraine, as the retaliatory effect of the Israel and Hamas situation played out. We've seen crude oil initially rally like we did when Russia came into Ukraine. But then that geopolitical, the headline fatigue starts to play a role, and we start to think, well, okay, maybe this is an isolated, hopefully it's a contained, and hopefully we're getting closer to the end than we are to the start. And you'll see crude oil start to unwind that geopolitical risk premium. We've seen it in a number of equity markets as well. For example, just two Fridays ago, I think it was, we saw Israel launch a missile attack into Iran and Syria. And that was certainly front and center of a lot of people's minds at this point of time. There was talk that potentially nuclear facilities had been hit, and the market sold off quite dramatically. But literally 3 or 4 hours later, once we got the all clear, hey, look, most of these missiles haven't really created any damage and the nuclear facilities haven't been impacted, equity markets have roared higher since. So I think you have to be aware, look, there is two timeframes, or certainly more than two timeframes in investing and trading. But in the short term, yes, it creates some noise. In the longer term, these geopolitical events, particularly when we're looking at things like oil over the past 30 or 40 years, when crises in the Middle East come along, which they do every so often, the long-term effect isn't that it dramatically alters the price.
That's really interesting. Really interesting to hear about those two different timeframes as well, Tony. I'm conscious of the time. So before we wrap up, one of the major questions that some listeners probably have at this point is, how can I actually go about buying international equities and other bits and bobs if I'm interested? So very quickly, what's the process? And is it similar to buying Australian listed shares and ETFs and other assets?
Yes, it is. And I think one of the things we've seen over the past 5 to 10 years is more platforms offering global shares. And I know at IG, we certainly do. And if you wanted to sort of think about how you could do it, there's a number of ways. You can go out there and just buy, you might like Apple, you might like Meta, you might like Tesla. You can buy those individual stocks through the platforms. You might prefer to get a broader range of stocks, and you can do that by holding an ETF, which might be a portfolio of technology stocks, or an ETF over US stocks or European stocks or even global stocks, if you would prefer, it gives you that option to do that. And some of those ETFs are actually listed on the ASX 200. So the good thing about that is you're investing and trading in and out in Aussie dollar terms because it is listed on the ASX 200. Another way is by buying those ETFs listed on offshore exchanges. Now, with that, you incur, well, you don't incur, but you bring into the play an element of currency risk, because if you're investing in a US-based ETF, then you obviously have US dollar exposure. If you're investing in the German stock market, you have euro exposure and yen exposure if you're going into Japan. So for me, probably the way that makes the most sense is if you are looking to gain exposure to a wide range of offshore stocks, it probably is to do it via an ETF listed on the ASX 200. But there is, as I mentioned, quite a few ways of being able to do that.
Tony, we have covered so much ground today. So thank you so much for joining us on Friends with Money. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show.
My pleasure, Tom. Thank you for having me.
That's it for this episode of the Friends with Money podcast. But don't forget to jump on our website, moneymag.com.au, for your daily dose of financial news. Or you can go grab yourself a copy of the latest edition of Money Magazine in all good newsagents. As always, Friends with Money will be right back in your podcast feed next week. So until then, I am Tom Watson. Goodbye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are general in nature, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.